Welcome to Her Leading Story, a podcast that will inspire you with stories from amazing female leaders and give you some ideas to help you design a life and a career that's perfect for you. It's totally doable, and the good news is that you'll have me and our community of leading women by your side every single step of the way. Let's get started. I'm your host, Julie Artis, and this is Her Leading Story. Welcome back to Her Leading Story. I am thrilled that you have joined us again this week. This is Julie, and this is going to be a solo episode this week, really inspired by a conversation I had with one of my clients about opening yourself up to opportunity, and especially how to do that if you've been working in the same place for a long time. So just a little bit of background, anonymously or confidentially, about this particular client. She's been working in the same position for several years at the same work. And she likes the work itself, but more recently, it's gotten even more challenging because she has a long commute and she's not thrilled with some of the changes that are happening in the organization. She's a little unclear on how to advocate for herself with her boss and her boss's boss. And so I've been working with her on that, but I'm also working with her on redoing her resume and getting things ready to go so that when opportunities arise, either through networking or through job openings, that she has made herself open to noticing and receiving and pursuing these kinds of opportunities. I find that when I talk to women who've been in the same position for a long time, and that's actually most of my clients that I have, they've been in the same position for like a decade, and something doesn't quite feel right anymore. And it could be that the workplace itself has changed. It could be that they've changed, but they're stuck in a rut. They can't quite figure out, like, how do I advocate for myself? How do I make something different in my day-to-day? How can I reframe this so that I'm not coming at this from a really super negative place? You know, and I think as humans, when we feel like there are no options or choices, it really gets us stuck in a very dark place. If we feel like I have to spend the next decade or two of my life doing this same thing, I don't know that I want to do that, but I don't know how to get out of it because it's too late. I'm already here. This is a good paycheck. Like, there's a lot of actually very good reasons why, like practical reasons, that it can feel scary to open yourself up to other opportunities. But what I think is really, really important is moving from that dark place of not having any choices to opening yourself up to the idea that there's opportunities out there and you can do the work to make yourself ready to notice them. And when we say do the work to open yourself up, I mean, what does do the work mean? This is like a very common, you know, coachy, therapeutic kind of phrase right now, do the work. And it can mean a lot of different things. In the context of career coaching, depending on where a client is when they come to me, we might do things like a core values assessment. Values meaning what's really important to you. Or we might do like the strengths finder, like what are the enduring superpowers and skill sets that you have that you can bring to bear in an organization. I might have clients do different kinds of journaling exercises. And one of the most powerful ones, I actually talked about this in episode 5. So if you want to go back and listen to that one, I would recommend it. But I'm going to go deeper on the exercise that I call decades, right now and just tell you a little bit about my experience about how getting clear on my values and my strengths and my sort of some threads that had been enduring throughout my life really made me open and available in my career to a new opportunity. So I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to get more specific about what happened with me. I had been chair of my department, this is a decade ago, for 4.5 years. Our terms are 3 years long as chair. It's kind of an elected position. And then you can rotate back to the faculty. It's different than being promoted to a manager and then you're a manager, right? The chair position is usually elected and appointed by the dean. And then you just get a 3-year term and then you can do another 3-year term. I was about halfway through my second term. And, you know, I learned a lot. I'd gotten better at being chair. I had made it through some challenging moments. I had learned a lot about having difficult conversations and being really organized. And I'd learned a lot about myself, right? What I liked doing and what I didn't like doing. And I found myself at this crossroads because it was getting to the point where I was contemplating, well, what's going to happen when I step down as chair, which was supposed to happen at the end of year 6. And I really started thinking this through and journaling on it, actually, and reflecting on it in, say, spring, like ahead of that. So like 1.5 years before the end of my term, I was just thinking, like, what do I want to do next? Like, what would really light me up? What would motivate me to jump out of bed every morning? And I don't remember exactly where I found this one journaling exercise, but I remember it so clearly that like I can describe it to you and describe the effect that it had on me. And this is called Decades. I like it because it's kind of not a journaling exercise, like, oh, how do I feel, right? It's more like, let me take a look back on the decades of my life and what I was into. So I took a piece of like plain paper, unlined paper, like printer paper, and turned it so that it was horizontal. So like landscape, not portrait, right? I drew, let's see, 6 columns. And at the top of the columns, I put 0 to 10, 11 to 20, 21 to 30, 31 to 40, 41 to 50, and 50 and on, my age. And in the columns, so from 0 to 10, it was like, what was I really into when I was younger than 10? Like, I was into reading. I was into riding my bike. I was into like playing outside and climbing trees and reading like Laura Ingalls Wilder and series of books. And then, you know, 11 to 20. And this is where I, you know, was more in high school and college. And I wrote there about some of the different jobs I had and some of the different volunteer opportunities and clubs that I was in college. Some of the classes I took that had a huge impact on me. So it's like distilling down each decade to the main events, but also like, what was the thing that had a huge impact on me? So there were a couple of classes that had a huge impact on me in college. I noted those and kind of reflected on why. I studied abroad when I was in college. I reflected on like, what about that experience changed me? What did I love about it? What did I struggle with? My 20s, that column is a lot about grad school for me. And so I started getting really reflective about, okay, I'm a sociology grad student and I thought I would be interested in this one thing over here, but what I'm really interested in is this other thing. And then into my 30s, I was on the tenure track as a new faculty member. I was having kids, you know, and then in my 40s, I had you know, when I did this in my early 40s, 10 years ago, I had just started, like I was chair of my department and what I had learned and things like that. So if you want to do this exercise, I've basically just now given you the template. And so to be very specific, I would just like draw out a column for decades in your life and ask yourself, What were the major events in my life? What impacted me the most and why? What hobbies, interests, obsessions did I have at that time? And write it all out and then see if you notice threads. So just for example, one of the threads that I had noticed, and again, I did this 10 years ago, almost exactly to the season 10 years ago, I had noticed that in one of the organizations I belonged to in college, I was really into mentoring and leading younger students behind me. I noticed that when I was in grad school, I liked advising the grad students who were coming up behind me. I noticed that I, you know, loved advising students when I became a tenure track professor. I still loved teaching, of course. And then about 10 years ago, I got involved in a faculty development coaching organization, and I just loved coaching and mentoring other faculty members. And now here I am in my 50s, and I'm like, I want to take it bigger. I want to coach women about their careers, right? So like, this is an enduring thread in my life, which makes me know that coaching and mentoring and to a certain extent, teaching and supporting people that are just like one step maybe behind me or one of my peers is like truly something that really resonates with who I am as a person and always has. No matter what the surface level things that are going on, I've always been attracted as a, like my core human being is attracted to that kind of one-on-one or small group, like mentoring, coaching, talking, helping with issues, strategizing, right? So it's no surprise that I am where I am. But the thing that I wanted to talk about, the other thing I noticed when I did this decades exercise for myself is that when I was younger, I had written down in response to the what were you obsessed with? I had written down puzzles, putting things together, figuring things out for like when I was around 10. And I was like the tech person in my household. Like I was the one when we got the very first VCR. Hello, fellow Gen Xers. When I got that very first VCR, I was the one that hooked it up to the TV, not my parents, but I was like, I can figure this out, you know? And then I wrote like technical instructions for my mother when I left for college so that she would know step by step exactly what to do. So if she wanted to record something. So, you know, like I've always been attracted to trying to understand and teach myself about complex things. So when I got to grad school in sociology, as I mentioned earlier, I thought I was interested in this one thing. And this one thing was qualitative research. And I actually did a fair amount of qualitative research. But what I didn't expect was to enjoy quantitative or statistical research as much. Like I really enjoyed the coding. I really enjoyed the detail work, the logic, the puzzle, all of that to me was just like, I could spend hours and time would just go away. And I was pretty naturally good at it. Like I could see, like if somebody didn't put a semicolon at the end of a coding command, I would see it and other people would miss it. And so it just became clear that I was like really suited to that kind of detail data work. And so that drove a lot of what I chose to do in my early career at the university, right? I ended up doing a fair amount of quantitative research and publishing quantitative research papers. And I also ended up teaching statistics. And I teach statistics, almost exclusively statistics for the social sciences now as an administrator still. So for 20 years, I've been teaching statistics and I love it. As chair, I was kind of a data nerd, looking at course enrollments, like what's going on? What is this telling me? And it didn't realize until maybe I was sometime in my chair moment 10 or 15 years ago that this was something I was good at that I didn't realize was a valuable skill. Like, it just came really easy to me, and it still does. And it doesn't come easy to everyone. Even all these very smart PhDs in different departments and everything that I worked with on a daily basis, like, it's not something that, it is something that can be learned, I will say, but it is not something that comes easily to everyone. And so I had this like moment when I was doing my own decades exercise, like the teaching and advising. I was like, yeah, I knew that. What I hadn't quite named until I did that exercise was the thread of like figuring out puzzles, really being interested in like the evidence, the data, and how it all works together. What kind of story is it trying to tell? How can we make decisions based on what we're seeing in the data? Like, I had not put that together yet. I was not yet aware until I had done this exercise, right, that that was one of my strengths. Okay, so I'm now like, oh, that's interesting. So what I want to then finish this story by is to tell you, like, I wrote in this journal and I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Maybe I should see after I'm chair if there's some way that I can, you know, use that maybe in administration, maybe in my own work, maybe in research, maybe in public sociology. I don't know. Like, what can I do with this? And like literally within the month, I was in a meeting and the, I think, vice president for student records or something like that had come to my college to the leadership meeting to talk about this data-driven research project that they wanted to get some buy-in for because they wanted to be able to help with student enrollments and scheduling and students' like graduation and completion rates. And the more they started talking, the more I was like, it was like I had been primed by my journaling exercise to realize, oh my God, this is like kind of exactly what I was thinking might be good for me next, but I don't know. Maybe I can just be involved in some way for now. So I sent my colleague, who I knew a little bit, who is the vice president that had done the presenting, I sent her an email and said, I know you're putting together a group to study this, and it's mainly associate deans. And I know I'm a chair, but I'm a data nerd, and I would love to be involved in any way, shape, or form. So I got on the pilot group for this in the spring. And we had a couple meetings, and I was like into it. And then it turns out we had a bunch of retirements. And that vice president who got me involved on the pilot ended up was retiring in June. So she calls me out of the blue. It was in late April 2014 and says, hey, would you be interested in leading up this project? If so, I'd like to arrange a meeting with you and my boss, the senior vice president of blah, blah, blah. And for me, I was just like, okay. And the more I got into it, the more I realized this would be 100% work that I could do based on not only my experience as being chair of my department, but also drawing on my strength of being a data-driven decision maker, data-driven person, somebody who's naturally curious and likes to solve puzzles. And so by the end of May, I had resigned from being chair a year early. So I stayed until July 1st, which is when these things usually turn over at my university. And then I took on an appointment in basically Central University Administration to work on this quantitative data-driven project that would help chairs make better decisions about scheduling. And I worked on that project for several years. I've learned a ton. And now I'm the associate dean in my own college that basically runs the schedule and monitors enrollments and everything like that. And I find it like super, it matches like what I'm good at and what I really like to do, what I find easy, what I find is really important also in terms of the university and the college. So the big takeaway here isn't that I got this job in central administration. The big takeaway for me is when I think back on this, I think if I had not done that decades exercise and essentially not made myself open to opportunities, like almost like primed my brain to like pick out opportunities that would fit with this data puzzle strength of mine, I might not have emailed that vice president about the opportunity to be on the pilot for this thing that they were discussing. I might not have been interviewed by the senior vice president and offered the opportunity to be on appointment in central administration. I am very, very clear that the exercise that I did that helped me unearth and become much, much more aware of what I was great at really primed me to be open to any kinds of opportunities that were dropped for me in front of me along the way. So, you know, you can say this is something like, I don't know. Some people would say I manifested the job because I like was doing the work and all that. The universe opened up the doors. I mean, okay, maybe. It depends on how like woo you are. And I have a little bit of woo. But I really think this is more of that situation where I got really internally clear on what I thought my next work position could look like. And I didn't, there was no job like this before. It didn't exist. And so it's not like I was shooting for a specific position. I just knew like, oh yeah, you know, data is really important. It's becoming more important. We need to know more about what kind of decisions we need to make. We need to make sure we're doing the best on behalf of our students and so on and so forth. So I get the big picture here is like you have to do the work, do that internal work, whatever that means for you, so that you can actually see the opportunities in front of you. If you stay stuck and kind of like not reflective about this, you won't even notice that there are opportunities out there. And so you have to do this almost like this pre-work, right? If you're thinking about like, oh, maybe I should go look for a different job or find a different position, or what am I going to do after this like contract position is up or something like that. Like you need to do some pre-work and really reflect back on yourself and become a lot more self-aware. And of course, this is something I as a coach can help with, but it's also something that you can do yourself, right? Where you do journaling, where you're really like tuning in to what your idea is of what would be super exciting for you to do next. And, you know, I think when you do that, you prime your brain, as I said, to see opportunity. And this is actually a psychological concept that has been noticed in a lot of different studies. And it's basically the idea that if you prime your brain to see something, it will see it. So just by way of an example, I was on vacation with my boyfriend in Colorado, and he's into cars. I'm not. I know nothing. And he was talking about the 4Runners. We were driving around in the mountains and the 4Runners, and a lot of people here have 4Runners because they can go through the mountains and blah, 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 and they're built on a truck base. I don't remember what else he told me. But then we started playing this game of noticing 4Runners. Oh, there's a 4Runner. There's a 4Runner. And I became better at like being able to tell just from the front of the car whether it was a 4Runner, even from the side if it was a 4Runner. Like I didn't even know what a 4Runner was before this trip. And so what was funny is I was like, well, I bet there's not that many 4Runners in Chicago, right? Because in Chicago, like, why would you need a 4Runner? I don't know. I mean, maybe you like 4Runners, but, you know, we do have snow here. It's nice to have a nice four-wheel drive situation, but we don't have the mountains and all of that kind of, like, outdoorsy stuff in the same way that they do in Colorado. And so I'm like, I don't even know that I've ever seen a 4Runner in Chicago. And my boyfriend was like, well, yeah, you probably have. And I was like, whatever. So we get back. And wouldn't you know, like everywhere I go, there's a 4Runner. Every drive I take, there's one parked on my block most days. But until I like learned to see and look for the characteristics of a 4Runner, they were invisible to me. And so I think this is a good analogy for you to consider how you can prime yourself to notice opportunities when they come your way. Because if you don't prepare yourself, if you don't do that kind of pre-work, they're going to float by and you're not even going to see them, right? As I said, of course, this is something I help my clients with all the time. I just told this 4Runner story to one of my clients, which is why I wanted to share it on the podcast today, because we're working on getting her ready to be open for opportunities, right? Whether they're at her current job, whether it's working in a different location, whether it's looking for a completely new position in and of itself. But getting ready and being open is half the battle here, right? And so when you think that it's just about like doing a resume and LinkedIn and applying to positions, that's like, that's not the very, very first step. The very, very first step is being open to opportunity and doing the pre-work to get there. I would love to support you if this podcast resonated with you and you would like some support in doing this work ahead of time, before it's time to go on the market, to apply for those jobs, if you'd like to get some more clarity and more self-awareness about what kind of opportunities you want to be open to looking for, I would be thrilled to talk to you. I offer free voice your value calls every week where I talk to potential clients about what they're struggling with in their current career. And I would love to support you and talk to you a little bit about what's going on in your career, what kinds of places feel stuck, and how you might be able to open yourself up to opportunities so that you see them and they're not invisible to you. I hope this was helpful. I hope you guys have a great week, and I will see you next week.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Her Leading Story. If you love this episode, please help me reach more women by leaving a review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you next week.
This has been an Awkward Sage production.